back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, I'm joined by Eli Burakian, who created and set the Eastern White Mountains Triple Infinity Loop FKT, completing the 77-mile route unsupported in 2 days, 10 hours, and 51 minutes. Thank you, Eli, so much for coming on the show today. I'm really excited to chat with you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. I feel like we've known each other for a while and like it's nice to actually be able to finally meet you.
Yeah, exactly. I had you as a remote coach, I think. I don't know when that was, 10 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, so. A long time ago when I was still doing coaching. I would love it if you could start out, because this is a new route that you came up with. If you could describe what the Eastern White Mountains Triple Infinity Loop is, and also talk about how you came up with it.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. It's a route that I have been working on. I came up with this a couple of years ago and have just been trying to find the right time to do it. But the idea is it is a loop that highlights some of the really most awesome places in the Whites. And it basically comprises three loops, two of which are already on the FKT website, almost exactly the slight changes, but there's the Wild River Loop, which goes around the Wild River Wilderness, and you'll cross over the Carter-Moriah Range in the Whites, sort of the most easternmost section of the 4,000 footers in New Hampshire. And then you'll sort of wrap around, and the other side of that is the Bald Faces Meter-Royce Ridge. And that meets up with another loop that's on the FKT site called the Evans Notch Loop. And the Evans Notch Loop is another big loop, and that goes into Maine. A lot of people don't realize this, but there's a chunk of the White Mountain National Forest that's actually in Maine. And this goes to that, and East Royce Mountain, Speckled Mountain, Blueberry Mountain, and then kind of comes back up and meets up with the Wild River Loop. And then the third part of it is a loop on the Northern Presidential Range. So the way I did it, I went up Madison, and you hit Madison, Adams, Jefferson, Washington, and then you come down towards Pinkham Notch, and you cross over, and you finish that loop on the Wildcats. So you get 10 4,000 footers. It's about 80 miles with something like 27,000 feet of gain, and some really popular sections like the Northern Prezies, and some really remote sections like an Evans Notch and over near Maine and the Meter-Royce area. One of the awesome parts about the loop is that because it's three connected loops and there's almost no point where you're backtracking. So you can do any loop in any order and in any direction, which kind of makes it a choose your own adventure, sort of figuring out where do you want to camp, if you do want to camp, which might be the most efficient way for you to go. It also crosses Route 16 twice and Route, I think it's 115 on the border of, I'd have to confirm that, but you cross the road 16 twice, the one in Maine twice, and it used to cross the Wild River campground and go on that road, but unfortunately we've had some major rain events in the past few years up here, and they've washed out some roads. And actually in planning for this route, I called up the National Forest and was just asking some rangers, when is that road going to be fixed? And the guy was saying, well, with all the Doge cuts, we've lost all of our road maintainers and everything, so that road may never open again. But nonetheless, you have four road crossings plus the summit of Mount Washington, which is road accessible. And so there's plenty of opportunities for a supported adventure, a self-supported adventure, or an unsupported adventure. And without any repeat and being able to choose which, you know, direction you go, there's sort of a lot of options for people to figure out how best they want to approach this route.
And why did you want to develop this? And why did you want to set an FKT on it? What was the motivation there?
Yeah, so I wanted to develop it just because I think it showcases some of the most incredible terrain in the Whites, and it's a real challenge. I mean, to get 27,000 feet of climbing in 78 miles really shows, you know, what you can do in the Whites. And then as far as myself, I've never been a fast runner or hiker, but I love the FKT culture. You know, I've been following since Pro Boards. I tried to break the long trail record three times when it was Travis's record. So I've been doing this for a while, but I've never really fast. And what I've really come to realize about myself is I love creating routes that I think are really engaging and also have a lot of beautiful spots and could be good hiking or running, but I try to create routes that I hope others will want to follow, faster people than me. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, one of the beauties about FKTs, right? Is it's sort of, it's open for everybody. And those of us who aren't the fastest still have an opportunity to create something that we're proud of and let others see how they do. So, I mean, my route, for example, I completely bonked on this. And I was actually, this was a training route for another thing that didn't happen last year, but I think I was 58 hours and something. And I think I could probably do this in 40 to 45 on a good day. And I think an elite athlete could probably go sub 30, and maybe mm-hmm. someone like Jack Kinzel or something could go sub 24. So, you know, I think there's a whole spectrum of how people could approach this thing. I also really love the unsupported aspect of FKTs. And this one, you know, you cross a fair number of rivers, although I can get into that. It was a little different this summer, but you know, there's a lot of opportunities to refill. There's shelters, there's campsites. So if you just want to treat it like a backpacking route, you can do that as well.
Yeah, I like what you said about there's an opportunity for everybody in FKTs. I think that's something that gets missed a lot of times is that, you know, between the different modalities and the ability to either create a route or just do lesser known routes, I mean, just about anybody can get out there and have an FKT experience. And it is nice because once you put something out there, then pretty soon people start showing up, you know. Yeah. You put down a time for this, and I'm sure that it's going to attract attention. And now we are going to see faster people out on it. I logged FKTs that were just some of my training runs because there weren't women's times. And I was just like, why aren't there women's times here? And then within a year, like three women had gone out and broken my record because they actually went out for it, you know? And I was like, good, you draw the attention and it gets people out there.
Yeah. And I think we hear all the big names, and I think it's important to highlight the number of people that are just average athletes that are doing what they can do, you know? And I think it's also kind of cool to come up with new routes in places that people don't realize that there's a lot of new opportunities to explore places. You know, everyone's heard about the Presidential Range, but there's so much more in the White Mountains and so many more ways to approach it. And I think this is another sort of opportunity for people to do that. So
yeah, absolutely. Everybody knows the Prezi and the Pemi and all of this. And there's just so much more to the White Mountains. I was doing a section of the AT this summer and there was just really bad weather and I was on the schedule and I was just like, well, I can't go over the Presidentials today. And I went down into the Dry River Wilderness, which I'm sure, as you know, is not the AT.
Yep.
and it was very exciting and I made my way through, but it was just cool to be in a different part of the Whites and see something else, you know, and it was very different and beautiful.
Yeah, you step off the beaten path and you'll have it to yourself for, I mean, there was long sections of this route that I didn't see another person mm-hmm. for, you know, 12, 20 hours. I don't even know. Very long, long periods, you know. Obviously, most people aren't hiking in the middle of the night.
right, yeah. I was wondering if you saw very many people when you weren't on the AT corridor or some of the more popular areas.
Yeah, not many. I mean, I think, I'm trying to remember what days I was there. I think I was there on a weekend. So I saw a few more in Maine than I thought I would. But obviously, mm-hmm. in the Wild River Wilderness, I didn't, as soon as I got past Carter Notch Hut, there was nobody back there. Mm-hmm. And also, I think, you know, if you look at sort of the vertical profile, you might be like, oh, this is the easy section, because there's just not much elevation gain. But in the wilderness sections, they're not maintained nearly as well. And so there's right. a lot of blowdowns. It almost feels like you're bushwhacking at points, some really eroded mm-hmm. spots where your feet can get caught under the root. So your progress isn't necessarily so much faster on those sections that look flat on the map.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That the profile can be deceiving, especially in areas that aren't as maintained or super rocky areas where, you know, it's like, oh, it might be flat, but it sure isn't fast.
Yeah.
For those that aren't really super familiar with hiking in the Northeast, it's a little harder to conceptualize. But I think most people would consider a lot of New England hiking as scrambling versus hiking. So could you talk a little bit about the character of this route? How much of this is hands-on hiking or scrambling versus how much is actual just single track trail?
Well, it's all trail, but I mean, I can kind of go through the route the way that I went through it. I started at Dolly Copp Campground, went up the Daniel Webster Trail, which I'd never been up. It's another way to go up Mount Madison. And as soon as you hit treeline there, it is just one big rock scramble hand over hand. I personally love that type of full body hiking, you know, so I really appreciate that. But certainly in the Northern Prezis, there are sections that are like that. That being said, you know, I would say the Daniel Webster Trail is the worst. Once you're on the AT, not too bad. I know the AT actually bypasses a few of this. I know it goes over Madison. I think it bypasses Jefferson and Adams near the summit. Mm-hmm. So we make those little extra jaunts to the summits. So that's not too bad. Going down the Glen Boulder Trail into where it crosses over the river to the Wildcat Range, that is... that is very steep.
Yeah.
And then I think anyone who's done the AT or spent time in the Whites knows the Wildcat. The climb up from 16 to the Wildcat Ridge, I think you mm-hmm. do something like 2,000 feet in 0.7 or 0.8. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's less than a mile, yep.
Yeah. So, you know, that's pretty rough. Once you get past that, you're more into... you're into the Wild River Wilderness, which is, like I was saying, is more muddy, rooty, technical in that way, but not scrambly. And then it's pretty much trail. You know, when you get up to the Meters, it's pretty much trail. Although I will say those sections, the Meters and the Royces, the trail is kind of built on the side hill a little bit. So it's not as easy as one would think. And then, you know, you'll cross over Evans Notch, go hit Speckled Mountain, come down over Blueberry, come around Cold River Camp, and then you'll go up South Bald Face, which is one of the highlights of the whole trip. And I feel like if you have a chance to visit the Whites and you want to check out a peak that's as amazing as any 4,000 footer, but is a little off the beaten path, South Bald Face is incredible. It's just a nice hiking trail up to the shelter. And then once you hit that, it's this cascading ridge of sort of 3-foot granite slabs that sort of overlap each other. There's really nothing like it in the Whites. And I think almost everybody who's familiar with the Whites will tell you the Bald Faces are truly spectacular. So that really is more sort of hand over hand, but it's quick. It's not a huge section. And then I'm trying to think. And then we go over Wild River. And then you're doing the Carter Mariah Range. And so there are some sections on that range that are pretty technical. There's a really steep section on the north side of North Carter, which I had forgotten about, to be quite honest. It's been a few years.
It's best to just forget that exists. Yeah. If you ever want to go back.
Yep. So that was difficult. And then, of course, coming down off of Carter Dome, down the Carter Notch Hut, that's a pretty steep section as well. So you get a little bit of everything. And from there, 19 Mile Brook is a little technical, a little bit of road walking, and you're back along the river. So this trail really has a little bit for everyone. One of the things I will say is this year, there's also could be some significant river crossings, you know. So this year we had the worst drought we've had in memory up here in the Whites. And in fact, I was supposed to do another FKT later, an unsupported one, and I would have had to do 25-mile water carries. And I'm like, I can't do this. But for example, crossing over the Ellis River was just ankle deep, and crossing over the Wild River, which where you cross over it from the old Wild River campground, it's 100-foot wide. And the river when I went up was 5 feet, maybe 5 feet wide and 6 inches deep. I mean, the river was almost gone. There was no river in Evans Notch. I actually had to backtrack a couple times to get water. And crossing over the Wild River, I gathered a gallon of water. I was able to find a muddy puddle up on the ridge. But other than that, I had no water from the Wild River up over to Carter Notch Hut. So that was doing the whole Carter Mariah Range with a gallon of water. It just wasn't fun. So, you know, it just depends. You know, you might have, sometimes it might be a crazy river crossing. Sometimes you might be dealing with lack of water, but they're all fun things to handle as FKT. You know, I always say that the trips that go smoothly are forgettable. The ones that have some tough parts are the ones you remember. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The most memorable ones are the ones that probably had the biggest challenges. I'm curious, since you were talking about the fact that you can do these loops in kind of any order and any direction, how did you decide where you wanted to start and finish and which direction you wanted to go around each loop?
I started based on sort of where I thought I'd want to camp out that night and also where the best parking was, all that kind of stuff. In fact, the way I describe it on the FKT website is a little different. In one of the photos, I actually have a spreadsheet because there's so many trails used. I took a photo of the spreadsheet and the list and show all the different trails. And I have it going in a different direction. And then I decided here that I wanted to start at Dolly Kop because, you know, A, I could park my car there and not have any worries about it on a weekend. And then I kind of knew out where I wanted to camp the second day. I also did not want to come down. I didn't want to finish coming down the Wildcat descent, like,
fair,
you know, it's so interesting. Like, you know, I also write guidebooks for Falcon Guides, and my most recent one is 101 Classic Hikes in Northeast. And of course, I went back up to Katahdin, and I went up the Hunt Trail, and I was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is the first mile for any southbounder. It's the most, it's the craziest trail, and I feel like, you know, descending down the Wildcat Ridge to 16 is a very similar sort of experience. It's just, you know, hold on tight because it's straight down, you know.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, you know, when the bridge came out, there's now a reroute. So some thru-hikers are skipping that section. But I think most people that can do it and should do it because it's an incredible range. But so I think the direction of like where I wanted my ascents, where I wanted my descents, where I knew I'd be camping just kind of made me realize I wanted to do it in that direction. But really, you know, it'd be fun to do it in a different direction. And I've always felt like hikes are almost brand new when you do it in a different direction. You know, you see things in a totally different way. You experience the trail in a totally different way. So I'm excited to get back and go in a different direction or start with a different loop, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I think especially in this part of the world where you do have kind of those steep hand over hand sections, going up something is very different than going down it. And you can be going the opposite, because I've done the AT through there, northbound and southbound. And yeah, you forget about things until you're coming the other direction. Maybe it's not a big deal to go down that steep thing, but then you get there and you have to go up it and you're just like, oh, or vice versa. You know, it definitely makes it a very different experience.
Exactly.
So you've mentioned camping out a couple of times. So can you talk about that aspect? Because I know some parts of the White Mountains, there's very strict rules about camping and how you handled that. And also just what kind of gear you were carrying for camping. Was this just a bivy or did you have a full setup? How much were you sleeping?
Yeah. So, you know, camping can be a little bit tough on this route, particularly in the presidential range. I think any through hiker will attest to the fact that it's hard to camp unless you're at a hut. So, you know, there, if you're going to do the Northern Prezi part, the easiest thing is just to do that in a day, you know, do that all at once and not camp in that section. Beyond that, there's a couple spots in the Wild River Wilderness that are just nice open campsites near streams. Same thing. There's a shelter over in the Bald Faces. I actually stayed at the old Wild River campground. It's not open, so I kind of treated it just like a natural campsite. But the shelters are still up, the three-sided shelters. So I was able to just throw down there and have a flat place to camp. So that's a very convenient spot to camp. In the Wild River is good. In Maine, there's not much there. There's the Cold River Camp, but that's sort of like a paid camp situation. But, you know, you can find spots off trail if you need to. I think the best spots are the few spots in the Wild River, the shelter at the Wild River Campground. There's a shelter right below South Bald Face. There's also Dolly Kop Campground. Obviously, if you made that in the middle of your trip, you could just stay at the campground there. and, you know, pink them notch if you needed to. And as far as what I carried, I just had the Durston pack, a little Enlightened equipment quilt, and I just had a little emergency bivy. I'm definitely a blow-up pad kind of guy because I feel like I can sleep better with that. But didn't cook or anything, just had a mix of, you know, salty foods and sweet foods and powdered mixes. I definitely overheated. It was really hot and I didn't quite hydrate enough. I think, you know, given the fact that there weren't all these little streams that are normally there, I really held back from drinking and it kind of bit me later in the adventure. But so the powdered drink mixes, for example, weren't as easy to consume at the time. So, but that's basically what I did. And as far as sleeping, the first night I probably slept. I'm not a great sleeper. If you look at my weaknesses for FKT, sleeping is always the worst. But I think I got 3 hours the first night, maybe 4 or 5 hours the second night of actual sleep. There's a little bit of getting ready and going and whatnot. But that's what I did. But again, I think, you know, I think someone that's really pushing this route wouldn't sleep. I think you'd put on a day pack and this would be a single day adventure or an extended day adventure, you know. I mean, if you do it in the summer, you could get, you know, you wouldn't have a lot of darkness if you started early in the morning. So.
Mm-hmm. And so you went into this with the intention that you were going to sleep that night. Okay.
Yeah. This was, you know, I wrote on my blog, this was sort of about a 80 to 85% effort. I had been hoping I was going to try for the unsupported New Hampshire section of the AT a few weeks later. And I had a foot issue in addition to, you know, we had no water and we just kept on staying dry. I mean, I don't think we had any water in all of July and all of August. And it just got too much. But really, this was sort of a training. Like, I wanted to put it out there. I was excited to get the route out, but I also knew that this wasn't going to be my best effort. That being said, I had planned on sub 48 and my body just wasn't cooperating. So I eventually sort of just said, hey, you know what? I'm going to finish when I finish. Luckily, there's no pre-existing time.
Exactly. That's one of the benefits. So you talked a little bit about your food, but given that you were out there longer than you intended, did you have enough calories and food?
Yeah, I was fine with that. Certainly, you know, there's certain foods I wish I had more of and certain foods I didn't, but, you know, I wasn't too worried about that. I mean, I'm kind of also used to running low. On my first long trail attempt, I was trying for Travis's time, brought 6 days and 17 hours worth of food, and it took me another day and a half. And I did the last 70 miles on 1,000 calories. So I know I can make it.
I feel like the food is it's the hardest thing to dial in. I've done several unsupported things at this point. And, you know, the food that I really loved on one, the next time I'm like, oh, I don't want to eat that. And then, like, you know, oh, I was way low on calories, so I brought way more. Then I had too much. And it's so inconsistent and it drives me crazy. I'm like, why can't I seem to dial this in?
Yeah. I think it's a learning, you know, it's a learning thing and it always changes what your body craves and all that. But yeah, that's always the challenge for sure. What your body will keep down and, you know, and then of course there's always the first time I did a long trail, I was like, oh, I'm doing my sort of calories per ounce spreadsheet. And I just filled my pack full of macadamia nuts because I'm like, these are the most calorically dense. I have not been able to eat a macadamia nut in the last decade. I mean, I overdid it. So, you know, sometimes it's like, what food do you want versus what's the most sort of like weight efficient?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I imagine on something like your Arizona trail or whatever, where you're caring for so long, you have to be a little more careful about that. And on my Iceland trip a couple of years ago, same deal. It was 2 weeks long and I had to be a little more careful about what I brought. But anything that's a few days, I just bring what I think I'm going to eat.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there is an aspect to it of different routes challenge your body in different ways. And so you want different things. you know? Because definitely I did that with the Arizona Trail. Like, not that I brought only macadamia nuts, but I definitely focused really hard on calorie to weight ratio. So I had a lot of nuts and nut butters and chocolate, you know, very calorie dense foods. And then I got out there and realized my body was just screaming for carbs because I didn't bring enough sugar.
Yeah.
And so I had to amass all of the sugary foods I had, put them in a baggie and bury it in the pack and ration it out so I wouldn't just eat all of the sugar. And I was just like, okay, this is getting rushed. And I was just craving bread, like having bread dreams. My body just wanted carbs. And I was just like, well, this was poor planning on my part. Yeah. You know? But I had done other things where I did do just calorie dense food and didn't have a problem with it, but it was shorter. So yeah, definitely just depends too on duration and route, and it can vary.
Yeah. So luckily in the summer, you know, I don't feel like I need hot food at all. So that makes it a little easier not having to carry, but definitely on longer stuff, it's nice just to have a stove later.
Mm-hmm. So with all of the food and the gear, how much did your pack end up weighing for this? Because you're out there a couple of days. How much did it end up weighing?
You know, I'm not much of a number cruncher. I mean, I used to really be so into the spreadsheets, and I've just realized, like, you know, I got a basic plan. I'm not an ultralight guy. I mean, I carried a camera on this. I carry my phone and some battery backups. You know, I like to listen to books. I like to hike at night listening to horror novels. I like to try to find the scariest books I can find. Nothing is more fun to me than like being alone in the woods late at night listening to a super scary podcast or horror books.
I can't even watch scary things at home and then go out into the woods ever again while I'm on trail.
But yeah, so anyways, I did have that. And also I was a little, you know, I have two young kids, and so my backpacking is limited these days. And I had sort of like, I'd forgotten to bring a sleep shirt, but brought two puffies and three winter hats and a summer hike. So clearly I had not completely dialed it in. But I'd say on average, my base weight's probably without water, 15, 16 pounds. And then, you know, I did have to carry quite a bit of water at times. So that was tough. But yeah.
Could we talk a little bit about the navigation? Because as you mentioned, you had a picture of a spreadsheet because there's just so many trails you used. And to my knowledge, stuff in the whites isn't amazingly well marked. Like, how did you navigate? Did you get lost? Did you have any issues with that?
For the most part, I didn't. I did take a wrong turn down the Black Angel Trail on my way down the Wild River. Up there, like in the Wild River, is probably the most poorly marked, and there's some interesting trail junctions up on the ridge, but there are a lot of trails used in this route. I mean, I think on the spreadsheet, I have like 30 or 40 different trails named. So I would highly recommend anybody that wants to do this route to download the GPX file of either my Strava, or I put it on CalTopo. I sort of create these routes on CalTopo. So there's that. But basically I just had put it on Gaia and just followed my Gaia, especially when it got dark. So that's the easiest. That being said, I think the one thing for people to be aware of is when you cross the Wild River, it shows there being a trail there. But I think it's the Kenduskeg Trail or something like that. But to get to it, you have to go through a pretty serious section of blowdown where there's not even a semblance of trail. So had I not had my Gaia with me, I think I would have been wandering around the woods to this day. I mean, I literally didn't know where to go, but luckily I just sort of was like, I'm just going to go this direction. And then eventually I hit the trail. I mean, it's probably a quarter mile total, but when it's a lot of down stuff and they're not doing any maintenance in there, you know, that I'd say that's probably the worst part as far as navigating. Everything else is pretty doable as long as you have the route. But yeah, I wouldn't just wing it on this one, you know. I mean, the Prezi's, it's easy. Just follow the highest line, take it over to Glen Boulder, go down Glen Boulder, up Wildcat River, go to Carter Notch. But once you get past that is when you sort of hit all these smaller trails. And I think a lot of people aren't familiar with the section beyond the Presidential Range, really, or the Franconia Range. So,
right. Yeah. Did you have anything that went really wrong? Like you mentioned taking a wrong turn. Did you fall on any of these rocks? Did you get injured at all? Anything like that happened out there?
No, it was really just bonking, not really paying attention to my body and really trying to like conserve my water because it was so dry. And I think that hit me. So there were a few times where I actually was like, I went by a water source and then turned around and went back because I realized that was it. Like I had gone like another 10th of a mile and was like, you know what? I might not see another water source for a long time. Right. And so I turned around. I had the one frustrating wrong turn on the Black Angel Trail, but that was probably an extra half mile, 3/4 mile, nothing.
Okay.
Nothing crazy. No, I mean, there's no way to get through a 2-day hike in the Whites and not slip and fall at least once. So there was a few scrapes and cuts and whatever, but overall I came out fairly unscathed physically.
That's good. Yeah. I feel like I inevitably get hurt somehow in the Whites. Like I always fall at least once. I guess you probably were able to choose this because it is so short, looking at the weather in advance. What was the weather like for you? I know you mentioned it was pretty hot, but overall, what was the weather and trail conditions like when you were out there?
You know, trail conditions were great. It was hot and dry. So it's sort of one of these things where it's like on one hand, there's no water anywhere. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the conditions are in fantastic shape because there's no water anywhere. So, you know, it's faster to move. And I got really lucky. I'm trying to remember if I had any rain at all. I might have had a little bit of mist, but I don't think I really had anything at all. So the weather was perfect, but I was not fully heat adapted for that type of weather. I mean, I think if you're familiar with the East Coast, obviously it's not just hot, it's humid. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you just become drenched and all of my clothing was soaked. You know, there's the salt stains on my shoulder straps and all that familiar stuff. But overall, I mean, I could not have really asked for better trail conditions. So that was great. And there was a place, you know, there were a few spots you could stop and dip in the water if you needed to. So, and I also, you know, I love hiking at night. Like I said, I mean, I like listening to horror novels, walking through the dark. So I'm a really solitary person in a lot of ways. And so you're pretty much guaranteed to see nobody on trail when you're hiking at night, you know, and you see tons of frogs everywhere and little, you know, salamanders and the red Fs. And it's fun to see things you wouldn't otherwise see. So,
right.
You know,
yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Is there anything else that we haven't talked about the FKT or what you've got coming up that you'd like to share about?
I mean, nothing specifically about this one. I just say, you know, I'd say if you're really interested in the Whites, go give this a go because it's a highlight. You're going to see 10 4,000 footers. You're going to go hit a couple peaks in Maine. You're going to climb South Baldface. You're going to have some really remote sections and some really popular sections. And you could even do it as 3-day hikes if you wanted, or, you know, do a crazy supported effort. So I really hope that this route is something that people take advantage of and really give it a go. And I'd love to see what other people can do out there. It also got me excited for, I sort of joke, my running joke is that, you know, now I have a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old, and I got into ultra running because I had to turn my month-long hikes into a week and my week-long hikes into a day while I have a family and little kids. So I'm a backpacker at heart, but it's fun to sort of attempt these things in a fast packer fashion. And I think, you know, I was doing the Bailey Range Traverse a number of years ago across the Olympic Peninsula. And I ran across this guy in his 50s and he was just cruising. And I just said, how are you moving so quickly? I think it took us like 8 or 9 days and he was doing it in 4. He was like, you just stay in shape the rest of the time. I was like, oh my God, you actually stay in shape like outside of hiking? So it's been fun to sort of approach fast packing in that way, knowing that if you keep your fitness up, so much more of the world opens up to you and you can just do a lot more in any given amount of time. So, and there's a real strong culture up here of FKTs, of hardcore hikers, and it's just growing and growing and growing. And what's cool up here too is sort of the divide between hiking and running is really, there almost isn't a divide because in a lot of this technical stuff, there is no, you're hiking. Like there is no running. You know, we had a running retreat last year and we didn't do much running. And when we got up to the presidential range, you know, it's just moving efficiently across the mountains. So anyways, this gives you a chance to experience it all. There's plenty of runnable sections on this too, in the lower sort of the valleys and on the main loop part of it. But yeah, I highly, highly recommend this. And I also want to encourage others to think about new creative ways to come up with routes on their own, because you don't have to be the fastest to really become part of the FKT culture. And it's super exciting for me. If you look at my routes on the fastest known time site, I'd say over half of them I created myself, you know, and that's been really fun to sort of just get into the creative side of these things. So just in this exact region where we are in the Northern Presidentials is a town of Gorham. And my friend and I started this new company called Northeast Trail Adventures. And we have two things. One is a running and hiking retreat, which we started last year. And we're going to be doing it again this year from June 5th to 8th, based out of Gorham, New Hampshire at Hub North. And we have some great leaders and coaches. I think everyone on this podcast will be familiar with Jeff Garmeyer, who got the FKT of the year and the self-supported AT record, and Alyssa Gudeski, who, you know, at various times has had the long trail and the 4,000 footers record. And anyways, just great people, myself, my friend Justin, and a few others, physical therapists coming in 3 days and three nights up in the White Mountains at Hub North. And it's a hiking running retreat. So northeasttrailadventures.com. And we also do a last person standing race, the Scutney Vertical Backyard. And this year, the winner went 90 hours and climbed 108,000 vertical feet in 90 hours. So, and there were a lot of folks who ran that also are on the FKT site. And there are a lot of these New England crushers up there. So you can go to northeasttrailadventures.com and see it, or visit us Instagram, Northeast Trail Adventures.
Awesome. Sounds like a lot of fun. I might have to check that out at some point.
Yeah, come on by. It's great. We had it as a running retreat last year. And then we realized, as we were discussing, it's actually a running and hiking retreat. And one thing I want to just emphasizes it's for all abilities. We'll have hikes for people that just want to do 5 miles a day and people that want to crush it all day long. So it's really for everybody, just to learn from each other and share meals together and really experience what it's like to be up in the Whites. And it's an awesome spot up there. And
yeah,
if you haven't visited the White Mountains, you need to, because it's the coolest hiking east of the Mississippi.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting about your route and the White Mountains in general with me today. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Heather. And I've really loved listening to the podcast, and I'm always excited to see what next adventure you're up to. And I'm a big fan of the unsupported stuff. So love, you know, the Washington and the AZT, and I'm excited to see what you've got coming next as well.
Thanks again, Eli, for coming on the show. You can read about his FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow his adventures on Instagram at Eli Burakian.